Hey, what's going on, guys? Welcome back to Think Big Bodybuilding Media. I'm Scott McNally, and today we talk with contest prep coach Dave Kalik. Now, I know that a lot of you guys are not only bodybuilders, but you're also coaching people too. It's been in my mindset as a coach to listen to people like Dave who have been doing this for a long time. You know, I think Dave said his first contest was in like 87 or something like that. I mean, most of us weren't even lifting in 87. So it's been in my mindset to listen to guys like Dave who have been around and done this for a long time. He came up in the 90s training out at Gold's with all those characters, and he's had the opportunity to work with a lot of elite IFBB pro bodybuilders. So we start out the show today talking about the strategies that he is using during this messed up season. You know, what is he doing with his athletes to try to get them to still, you know, be their best when they finally have the opportunity to get back on stage? Then from there, I go to a Q&A. We have a bunch of questions that we gathered together from you guys. Some of them are fun. Some of them are a little more serious. We discuss insulin protocols. We talk about peaking strategies. We also talk about how Dave likes to combine protein. He'll take like two different protein sources and use them in the same meal. So we talk about that. We talk about a bunch more. There's a bunch of sage wisdom in this. So I hope that you learned something. And guys, if you do me a favor, hit the like button. If you haven't subscribed yet, please do, because we have several programs coming out each week. You can stay up to date with all of our stuff. Guys, our programming is brought to you by TrueNutrition.com. You could use our code ADVICES for some additional savings. That helps to support the show. Plus, they've got high quality third-party tested supplements. You can't beat them. Plus, we're also sponsored by Azoth. Get Azoth.com, or you can go to our Amazon link in the show notes. Honestly, the best nootropic that I've ever used. If you can't tell, I'm on the ball right now because I took my Azoth. Check them out, guys. Get more shit done each day. Let's get to the program. Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome back to Think Big Bodybuilding Media and Advices Radio. Up next, we've got with us Coach Dave Kalik. What's up, brother? How you been?
Brother, thanks for having me on again.
Dude, pleasure as always, man. You know, for anybody who is just tuning in to Think Big and hasn't listened to all the Advices podcasts, Dave's been with us a bunch of times. Bodybuilder from back in the day. Now you've been coaching for quite a long time, man. You're pretty well known as a West Coast coach. I say West Coast coach, not like you just coach guys on the West Coast, but you're out of the West Coast, which I think is, I think there's still some prestige to being like California bodybuilder. I don't know. I want to think there is. What do you think?
I mean, like, you go, if you went back, if you walked into Gold's Gym in the 90s, late 90s, early 2000s, you could feel the energy in there. You can cut it with a knife, you know?
Yeah.
And now being more corporate or whatever, I mean, there's still, it's still the Mecca. And it's still, you know, a lot of photo shoots are done there, and, you know, it's still definitely a hub, if you will, for bodybuilders or people coming to town. And it's, again, it's still the Mecca, but, you know, I think there's some prestige, you know, being involved on the West Coast with bodybuilding. But yeah, it's, I mean, again, there's the East Coast Mecca, and then there's the Mile High Mecca. So, I mean, there's definitely good bodybuilding hotspots around the country. But yeah, I think still Venice, or, you know, the West Coast still kind of, yeah.
I had fun. I came out there to do a show 2 years ago now. And Dave came out, guys. He hung out with me for a little while at Gold's. And you were like the president. You were like the mayor of bodybuilding or something. When we walked in, everybody was just like, "Oh, hey!" Everybody knew you first of all, Dave. There, and then
I'm an old fucker.
Everybody knew you though, and you used to go out there on a regular basis. I mean, obviously, we're kind of, everything's shut down, you know, right now with the pandemic and all, but. Were you you were still heading out there on a semi-regular basis, a couple times a week or something?
Yeah, I mean, like the last like, couple of years, I mean, I'll go, you know, just, you know, twice a week. I would certainly, like, if a client comes into town and I wanted to work with him or her for a couple of days, then we would, you know, set up camp down there.
Yeah.
And we would train, you know, train for the week. I mean, there's times I'll go down there, you know, every day for a week, just to, you know, get a lot of stuff done and, you know, just get in the environment and see people, see friends. There's some periods of time where, you know, I won't go in there just periodically, maybe once or twice a week or once every other week. But generally speaking, when the season picks up, or I'm in there more often.
Yeah. And you head out to Armbrust a lot, I know, you know, working with Dorian Haywood.
Yeah, like every 6 or 8 weeks, go out there, work with Adam, Adam Young, Dorian Haywood. You know, Adam, for you guys don't know, Adam's my 212 guy. Dorian's an open guy that I have. There's also Haley McGrath. She's IFBB Women's Bodybuilding.
Is she out of there too?
She's crazy. Yeah, she's crazy. She lives out there,
Yeah.
crazy physique. And she was, all three of them are fingers crossed getting ready for the Wings of Strength series of shows that would, fingers crossed, start with Chicago July 4th weekend, fingers crossed. And then there's a string of, Wings of Strength shows through August, and then concluding with, fingers crossed, New York Pro September 5th.
Oh, right on.
And it's funny because all these shows at the end now, including Puerto Rico, which is one of the same weekends in August, these are all Wings of Strength shows.
Okay. Yeah.
And then the Olympia's Wings of Strength. So.
Yeah. Dude, I gotta say, man, Dorian's been looking crazy, the pictures I've seen. Like, honestly, last year you guys made I think you guys made like a real big impression, in the IFBB. This year, I feel like to me, I felt like a lot of people were waiting to see, like, okay, what's he gonna do this year now? Like, I think last year set him up for a lot. I think I have a picture here I'll throw up from him last year. This is him. This is that shot of him doing a most muscular standing on his own there. When's that from?
This is from Indie Pro from last year.
Okay. Yeah, dude, he looked incredible, man. I mean, he's just come so far. How long ago did he turn pro now?
So he turned pro. This is 2017 Nationals.
Okay. And how much more mass is he carrying now on like on
Well,
stage?
to give you an
Obviously, I don't
idea
know.
of how he's progressed, and this attributes to his genetics, because we all know that the genetic predisposition dictates, right,
Yeah.
and the work ethic. Of course. So when I met him, he had just come off stage from North Americans. He was, I think, like 213 pounds at that point,
No kidding.
and started working together. And then the following, then he did the USA, got second at the USA, got third at North Americans, and then finally the pro card was in Nationals in Miami in November. So he went from, in whatever 16 months, whatever he went. Well, less, because at the USA he was pretty much the same weight. The Nationals, he's a couple pounds, he was growing throughout that season too. But he went from a stage weight of, let's say, 213 to 232 during the
Okay.
pro, 233 last year. He was on stage in the 240s.
No kidding, man.
He did, out of nowhere, it's almost like a Ronnie Coleman thing. You know how Ronnie in his late 30s really starting to come to fruition, his mass and all that size.
Yeah.
So it's crazy. Like, this offseason was the year where he just exploded.
Yeah.
And he's just put on a, just out of nowhere. Fuck. I mean, he really literally, without even exaggerating, probably put on about 11 pounds of raw tissue this last year.
I mean, for like a newbie,
It's just crazy
that
how
would be great. That
much.
like that would be fantastic for someone who was like new to the sport, but for someone who's been around,
Right.
that's crazy.
Yeah,
That's like
it
that's
just it's
truly
just one of
crazy.
those years I've seen over the years. Been doing this since 1986. Yeah, I'm fucking old. When you see a bodybuilder get into a groove, it's kind of cool, because it's bodybuilding, right? And good bodybuilders are supposed to progress. If you have good genetics and the work ethic is there and the nutrition's there and the pharmacology's there,
Yeah.
you should progress. Bodybuilders get better. Good bodybuilders get better. He got better.
Yeah.
He. Again, the work ethic. I mean, here, you keep in mind, this is someone who the training intensity is just, through the roof. I mean, I could literally throw the kitchen sink at him. I can honestly say he's the only guy that hasn't puked doing legs with me.
No
Like,
kidding.
I just can't get him. I've tried, don't get me wrong. I mean, I've been evil motherfucker training, the workouts. But yeah, I mean, that's just nothing but good old-fashioned elbow grease, hard work, predisposed genetics, and nothing crazy with drugs. Standard, but pounding the food, pounding the weights, and having the genetics for all that to come to fruition.
That's freaking
And hence
badass,
this
man.
last year, I mean, yeah, it's just crazy how much he's gotten bigger.
That is cool. I remember you had coached Sean Roden in the past. I think I've got a picture of him around here somewhere too, back when you coached him. I got to dig that up still, but here it is. I pulled this off of your Instagram. I mean, I think, I think that he looked fantastic at the Olympia. When he won, I thought that was a freaking badass look, but I feel like they hadn't matched that Like it took that long to get back to that. What year was this? This picture.
To get back to this kind of conditioning.
Yeah, yeah.
So this was when Sean and I worked together. We qualified him for the 2011 Olympia.
Okay.
That was his first Olympia, and then this picture here is actually from the Arnold Classic 4 months later.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that was a badass. That was a badass shot, man. I just figured I'd kind of bring up, you know, some of the people you've worked with, some of the stuff you've done, because I know you don't do like you're not a guy who's out there, like you don't do a ton of podcasts. You're not like you're the last person like in your social media. You're not just like running around bragging about the stuff that you do. You just kind of freaking do it, man.
No, I mean, I'm a pretty down to earth guy. You know, I like, you know, as you know, I'm a big metal fan. I like smoking pot, listening to metal, going to metal shows and dogs and animals. And that's my thing. You know, call me a simple man.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm lucky that coaching is a passion for me. I'm lucky because, again, you know, I mean, I'm fortunate to have, you know, real estate and other businesses and investments. So I'm able to, you know, like really enjoy coaching.
Yeah.
You know, I don't try to have a, you know, a big, you know, factory of coaching and, you know, copy and paste and, you know, same protocols for everybody. I really like to, like, I like to call my athletes on the phone, you know, and work through issues.
That's what I've heard, man. I've heard some of your guys, you're talking to them like sometimes a daily basis, which you couldn't do that with like 100 clients, you know?
No. And if we're inside the red zone before a show, especially like, I mean, you know, maybe I want to call the next day and say, hey, is the avocado combined with the salmon and meal three giving you gas like it was, you know, like, just working through food issues, working through stuff, because, you know, I mean, every week of prep, you got to make it productive, you know? And some, believe it or not, some bodybuilders, even some high level ones, if there's issues with like digestion or thing, some people just keep quiet unless you, so I like hearing, it's good to talk on the phone and get feedback and to game plan, yeah. You know?
So like I was saying, Dorian is, I mean, everybody I think is making some really good progress, but Dorian especially has stood out to me. I know you guys have had a big year planned. What's happening right now? I mean, we're all dealing with like just everything's really messed up, man. You know,
and yeah.
A lot of us can't even get to gyms. Food is even kind of scarce in certain points. So how's he doing right now? What's he got going on?
Well, I mean, basically like initially, like, so him and Adam originally were going to do Indy Pro, which was originally May 9th. And obviously, you know, that was a wash.
Yeah.
And then we set the sights on Chicago Pro, which is July 4th weekend. Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
So the tricky part was, you know, it's not like starting and stopping a prep. The idea is, let's say, of course, you know, when the show was canceled on May 9th and we were thinking about July 4th weekend, of course, certain, you know, protocols of chems were pulled out and, you know, long esters, let's say, reintroduced for a period of time.
Okay.
You know, caloric surplus, just basically like a holding pattern, you know, not blowing up and swelling up and putting up, you know, you have to stay within striking distance.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much what we did. So we just moved everything ahead accordingly. So now 9 weeks out from today, presumably, would be Chicago Pro for him and Dorian and Haley, her as well. Haley was going to do, you know, she's IPB female. She was going to originally do Linda Murray's show, April, that was canceled. So same thing for her, having to, you know, just make adjustments. You know, the idea is like, you know, there's adrenal integrity.
Yeah.
There's estradiol control, there's adrenals, there's so many variables that you want to keep the integrity of moving forward. You know, we don't want big estradiol rebounds or things of that nature. So it's just like a controlled process of there again, holding pattern. And then, you know, now let's say, you know, next week at 8 weeks out, we would start to flip switches.
Start pushing a little bit more again. That makes sense. So you kind of pulled.
So it's more of a cardio, you know, caloric, you know, deficit and things of that nature.
Okay.
More cardio.
So basically, just kind of you were pulling back in a lot of ways, slowing it down, and probably still making progress, I guess. But at the same time,
the thing is, like once someone like that, I mean, keep in mind what's kind of really cool about Dorian's prepping right now is that because he did put on all that muscle.
Yeah.
Putting him in a caloric deficit, he's actually, his calories are way higher. His caloric deficit now would be like a caloric surplus prior to that. You know what I mean? Like he's eating a lot of fucking food. And even during this holding pattern, because he was so metabolically efficient, you know, because we dug into the hole, we were digging into the hole for May 9th. So then we had a kind of cool rebound metabolically and everything like that from a sensitivity standpoint. So even though when we ramped up calories, not like, you know, cheat meals every day and, you know, cranking it, not like that, but I mean, definitely like more of a surplus, he's continually been getting leaner, even in this higher calorie structure, again, because of the metabolic efficiency they feel that he has from the muscle that he put on in the off season.
Let me ask you something just in general. I know what you're talking about. You know, when you said digging into the hole, I feel like, you know, with the people I work with, I've seen it takes a period of time of dieting and getting depleted before you can say really make use of a cheat meal or really make use of a carb up. You know, can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, you can't. Like, the thing is like this is that, you know, if you, I mean, very often when people starting prep, let's say, you know, as you probably have some people come to you just wanting to prep, forgetting the off season, it's like, hey, I have a show in 12 weeks, let's get ready.
Yeah.
I mean, the first thing is, you know, a lot of people are very glucose intolerant, you know, in the initial phases, and you throw in a cheat meal too early, A, you'll slow down the mechanism of what you're trying to do, and B, you'll store it, because it's kind of tricky, because in someone like that, you know, when you let's say you start dieting someone and they're in a deficit, and then if you throw in a cheat meal too early, that's not going to be a metabolically activating cheat meal. That's going to be more of a storage cheat meal, because here you are in a deficit, your body's like, fuck, you know, the storage. And again, if you're not glucose tolerant after several weeks of prep and you do it, you know, if your sensitivity is not there, it's not going to be a productive cheat meal. So you definitely want, as you're saying, you want to wait till the conveyor belt is moving along very quickly.
Yeah.
You know, cheat meal is supposed to be where you're like the next day you're like hungrier and actually a pound or two lighter, let's say on the scale.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you wake up the next day in a cheat meal and you're blown up and you're swollen, your stomach's, you know, you're sluggish, you don't have the sensitivity and you're not ready for the cheat meal. Back off for several weeks before you introduce it. You know, it's not engraved in stone. You need one anyway. As you know, I mean, some guys with really like, I have some guys, I have more keto guys, I have more nutrient partitioned guys where, you know, carbs, fats, and protein are more even. And I have, you know, high carb people that are more lower in fats and lower, you know, anyway, those kind of people, they don't need as much of a cheat meal. And there's already like more, a lot of spiking with carbs and stuff, you know?
Yeah. How do you go about figuring that out? You know, you say there's, you know, various different types of diets or people that respond better to keto, for instance. What do you start? Because here's what I do. I'll tell you, and tell me if you do anything like something similar. I'll start with everything, you know, carbs, proteins, and fats. And a lot of times I'll try to, remove carbs or remove fats, you know, first and see if they do better. So, but, you know, then if they don't, then we go the other direction. But what are some of the things you're looking for?
Yeah, I mean, like a lot of times you could tell, like, I mean, I could look at pictures and I could say, okay, if this person did an A1C test for fasted glucose, it's going to be elevated. You know, you could just tell. Yeah. A lot of times I'll have that done too. So, but
well, how can you just tell? What do you mean? Because I know, because here's the thing, and I'm this is what I'm getting at. I know I'm putting you on the spot here. This is kind of the art of bodybuilding. I know what you're, when you say you can just tell, I'm kind of.
Yeah, I mean, let me specify. I guess like sometimes, okay, let me answer it in a different way. So like I can look at someone and tell like, okay, this guy looks estrogenic. You know, either his estradiol is to the roof or the storage, the acknowledgement of estradiol in those tissues is, you know, there's a lot of acknowledgement of it and they just look estrogenic. There's like that fluffy look, you know, like more of the love handle. Like usually like you'll see like the lower body will be like, you know, the fat was more distributed lower body, especially glute and stuff like that, like legs. Like, you know, you've seen as well as I do, you know, see people like that could have like lean abs, but their ass is fat, you know, or vice versa. So let's say with cortisol, a lot of times with cortisol, you'll see like that lower body fat, you know, like storage, you know, mid visceral kind of storage. I see a lot, you know, with cortisol levels are elevated, and you see the same kind of storage, I think with glucose intolerance. You know, there's just certain, I can't explain it. It's just,
okay, that's all right.
They just don't look carb sensitive. They just look, you know, usually 9 in 10 times that'll be the case, but I'll start off with, you know, partitioned foods, as you're saying, you know, carbs, proteins, fats, and then we'll play around, like, you know, remove one of the energy sources, you know, and a lot of times people will generally fare, you know, most people need to have a lower carb structure when they diet.
Okay.
But it does take some figuring out. Some people thrive on keto. You know, some people need, you know, an occasional like gluconeogenic reset where, you know, like if your protein counts are too high, you know, you're not truly in keto. A lot of people think, I don't know if a lot of listeners might think this too, just by removing carbs, it doesn't mean you're in keto. Mm. I mean, if your protein counts are too high, you're going to be gluconeogenic. In other words, you're going to get a glucose drip from the protein's going to convert.
Yeah.
You reach ketogenesis by having a lower protein structure and a higher fat ratio. That's how it's done, you know. But with bodybuilding, you know, it's, you know, these are big, you know, these, there's a lot more muscle. It's not like an average, like the key, you know, Atkins is like the opposite extreme where people are just eating like, you know, pork rinds and all, you know, like
yeah,
it's all.
Yeah.
But bodybuilders do need a higher amount of, you know, so it's not really truly keto. As a matter of fact, it's kind of like you're kind of trickling back and forth between gluconeogenesis and ketogenesis if protein counts are pretty high. But I think that's what's very effective for getting shredded, you know. Mm. But sometimes, like with a high carb diet, or you know, sometimes I'll just do a gluconeogenic day or two in a row. Like in other words, where just all the carbs, all the fats are removed, and it's just protein counts.
You know? Okay. Huh. All right. Yeah.
And then carb day following that or something.
Yeah, and like I said too, or I was saying a minute ago, it was like, I feel that in, you know, podcasting, people are looking for information, but sometimes it's not like something where you can just, it's not like a series of things that you, like boxes that you're trying to check when you're analyzing someone's physique. For you, it's a level of experience and then an intuition. And I think that intuition, it's something that you can't really describe that on a podcast so much, but you can just see it and you know.
Yeah, it's a feel. Like, I mean, a lot of it has to do with experience. I mean, keep in mind, I did my first teenage show in 1986. You know, I've seen all the generations of all the different bodybuilders, all, you know, the different Olympias and all that stuff. And yeah, it's just from seeing over and over and over and over again. And it's just, and also just having like, I mean, you just look at someone and being like, okay, this is a lower carb person. This person will thrive on keto. And just generally speaking, it usually pans out that way. Mm. Well, I mean, again, nothing's engraved in stone. Anything's subject to change.
What worked for you best?
When I was competing?
Yeah.
I was more, I did really well, like, on, you know, on carb cycling. I did well on, you know, gluconeogenic patterns to reset. I did good on, you know, keto for a couple of days and then having, like, a, you know, carb pattern for, you know, I did well on moving around a lot all over the place through those spectrums.
Okay.
You know. Sometimes I'd have high carb segments, sometimes, but keep in mind, I mean, I wasn't, you know, I started becoming, I think towards the end when I tried coming back doing, you know, Masters Nationals and stuff like that, I think when you coach, you try coaching yourself, a lot of times you start, you know, second guessing things, whatever, because it's yourself, you know?
So. Yeah. You feel like you could have done better if you had turned to somebody else at that point, just to turn the reins over? Yeah.
Of course.
Right on. Hey, what's up, guys? Scott here, and I want to take a really brief pause from this episode to shout out our new great sponsor, Azoth. Now, first of all, guys, I want to say that I only bring in companies that I truly, truly do believe in. You know, I believe in TrueNutrition.com, and I believe in GetAzoth.com. This is a total nootropic product. They've sponsored BNR, Bodybuilding Nerds Radio, for a number of years now. I'm super familiar with it. I've watched the company grow, and I've watched Prady do great things with it. And listen, here's my story. You know, in all honesty, I feel like I fucked up in the early part of my life, and I didn't get the things done that I should have done earlier on. And I'm trying to make up for that now, honestly. You know, I'm trying to be the best person I can and help people and, you know, try to put a retirement together for myself. I'm totally self-employed between podcasting full time and nutrition coaching. My life is pretty demanding, and that's the way that I want to live it. I want to get the most I can out of life, and I want to have fun doing it. And if you can't tell, guys, I am having a lot of fun with this. By the way, I'm grateful for you guys listening and watching all the shows. Anyway, getazoth.com. I feel that my attention and my focus is increased when I use this. At the same time, I don't get the anxiety that goes along with a lot of stimulants. If you haven't tried a nootropic, this is the place that I would suggest going. Start out with these guys and let me know what you think. I've got links in the show descriptions. And if you haven't tried it, Prady even has an option to get a bottle for free. So it'll be no cost to you. You can see what it's all about. Either way, guys, check out getazoth.com and let me know what you think, because I found that it's a fantastic product. Hey guys, why are you using sports nutrition that was designed for someone else? At TrueNutrition.com, they offer the world's largest selection of quality protein powders, and they let you design your own custom blend from a variety of powders, flavors, boosts, and packaging options, like the Team Skip blend, for instance. That's over 20 billion possible combinations to create a protein powder tailored to your diet, your goals, your tastes, and your budget. TrueNutrition.com also offers the ability to create delicious custom oatmeal blends. And they're third-party tested, proving that all their supplements are ensured to have the highest level of quality and value. Don't be a sucker and pay for fancy packaging and gimmicks. Discover the source that bodybuilders trust and stop using mass-produced nutrition that wasn't designed for you. TrueNutrition.com. And use our code ADVICES at checkout to let them know that you support the shows. I got a bunch of questions here. We have some from over at the Advices board, and I have some I asked over on Instagram. I'm going to start with insulin protocol. Somebody asked about insulin, and I wanted to jump off with that because, you know, we've done, I can't even count how many podcasts now, Dave, but one of the topics that we had planned at one point on doing like a whole podcast dedicated to insulin, and it didn't happen because we had so many other things to talk about. But in general, can you tell us about your thoughts on insulin? Because I've heard so many different theories and ideas on the way people think you should use it.
I mean, so first of all, like, I'm not saying insulin is the holy grail, but when you combine insulin with growth hormone, it is very, very effective. And that it is a huge change. You know, now that being said, I'm not a 60 IUs of insulin a day, running Lantus in the background, pre-workout insulin where you're jamming as much into workout carbs as possible to prevent yourself from getting hypoglycemic. And No, I'm all about the post-workout window period for using insulin. Okay. And because to me, that's where the delivery needs to happen. I think when you're training, this is just my opinion, but I think when you're training, you shouldn't be, you know, trying to stabilize blood sugar while you're training, you know? There's a lot of great intra-workout carbs and all that stuff and, you know, things that would stabilize it. But then again, like, I don't believe your belly should be filled with glucose or any other types of carbs, like, while you're training. I think you should be empty. And then again, that messaging should be done afterward. Now, also, when insulin's used, I'm not a big believer in using, like, you know, like 20, 30 units at a time. I mean, I think you get more bang for your buck, so to speak, if you're using insulin for lower dosing protocol over a longer duration of time. Like, for example, like, I'm really big on, like, using Humulin R in the morning with growth hormone.
Okay.
Because to me, you know, if you use growth hormone with insulin, you're going to get a really good IGF, you know, release from your liver. That just, you know, that's what it does. You know, and I think that with Humulin R, which kind of cool about it, like, a lot of people are very much into the quick acting insulin. And it has its place. But I mean, to me, Humulin R is, you're going to build more muscle in Humulin R simply because of the duration of the half-life. I mean, Humulin R is robust in your system for about 6 hours, and it has like two peaks.
Okay.
So you can kind of, you can actually get the aspect of having insulin in your system going to the workout and having it complement the growth hormone you're taking in the morning because of the half-life. Like, let's say you wake up in the morning, you take four IUs of GH. You take six or seven IUs of Humulin R.
Yeah.
So you're going to have that in your system for 6 hours with two peaks. And if you were to train in that window period, you're going to have the insulin in your system.
Sure.
And you're going to have your system after you train. So you're doing that. So I'll either go back and forth. A lot of times I go back and forth from that. And then sometimes I'll shift where I actually use Humalog instead of Humulin R. I'll use the Humalog post.
Okay. Okay.
And I find that with the Humalog, you can actually use more IUs with the Humalog.
Really?
But again, like, I wouldn't even breach 10 IUs of Humalog. I would rather use it for a long, long, long period of time because what happens is it's like there's a point of diminished returns. I mean, if you're eating a lot of carbs and you have an insulin protocol, what's cool is that it gives your pancreas kind of a rest.
Yeah.
You know? But keep in mind that if you bang out too much insulin with too much carbs after a while, you know, there's a hormone called glucagon that's released. And glucagon is a hormone that lowers insulin. So if you have high insulin, your glucagon has to lower than insulin spiking, you're going to fry out the beta receptors in your pancreas. and then you'll lose sensitivity, and then you're fucked. Okay, and that's when you start seeing these guys with the thickening waist, the visceral fat, all that stuff. That's from losing sensitivity to insulin and then continuing to use it. That's where that stuff comes from. And then when there's androgen abuse, using four grams a week of test, whatever, that visceral fat will then become even more stubborn, and then it becomes more of a daunting task when dieting to try to remove it. And I think that's where you see guys that are really, really, really huge sometimes. They're walking around, they're just swollen, they look like their inflammatory markers are through the roof, and they look like they're walking around with a blood pressure of 190 over 120. Those are the guys you're going to see losing muscle, dieting down, because all that stuff is just so fucking stubborn because of the clusterfuck that you've established leading into that. You know, I was saying, you know, the idea is to, you know, you want to get bigger and bigger for each show, you know, while retaining conditioning or a bit more conditioned. It is bodybuilding, right? We want to keep progressing. So I was saying sometimes one needs to be lighter on the scale in the off season to actually be heavier on the scale the day of the show. Because if you, the days of walking around all swollen where you bend down and tie your shoes and you're out of breath, to me is kind of productive. There might be one good off season. Everyone should do one off season where they just get really sloppy heavy. Like, I think there is something to that, because then, you know, it's six. But after a while, you will lose your sensitivity for all everything we're talking about, and it'll be harder and harder to get leaner. And then what happens? When you have all that stubborn visceral fat, you got to do, there's more cardio needed, maybe more T3, maybe more depletion, you know, and then you're, I'm not saying you'd be catabolic, because it's very hard to lose tissue when you're taking, you know, steroids, growth hormone, there's resistance training, and there's all this protein, but you're certainly at the very least going to have a hard time retaining the tissue, right? And then at the end, you know, a lot of times people have to go into hold for a long period of time to burn off all that shit off. And then at the end, you try to like come back up, and then you're in a hole for so long. I mean, shit, then at that point, it takes 2 days just to fill up your hepatic glycogen in your liver, let alone getting glycogen in your muscles, you know? That's why you see these guys at the end, they'll be carbing at the end, 1,000 grams of carbs, and they're just getting sweaty from it, bloated stomach, not digesting the food because they're drying out and, you know, using a diuretic, and it's a fucked up look on stage.
Yeah. You know what I've really leaned toward doing is, obviously, you know, if you can get somebody in shape early, that's to their benefit. Sure. But if you can get them like 3, even 4 weeks early and lower that cardio down and build that food back up, you know?
Nothing better than that scenario, because this is one thing I think we could do a whole show on. Guys, be ready early, because if you're chasing conditioning at the end, here's what I'm seeing too, and then this kind of is in the same thing. This peak week.
Yeah.
Okay, it's peak week, got to deplete, load, do this. You're rolling the fucking dice.
Yeah.
You know, you might pull off a better look. You're better off, as you're saying, being ready 3 weeks out, coasting into the show. God forbid you back off things like cardio.
Yeah.
God forbid you start lowering T3. God forbid you can start progressively increasing calories going into the show, where the last week, I like to look at it now as like the last week is just another week of getting better.
Yeah.
Another week of prep.
Hey, I've got a picture here of
how many listeners out there have been like, fuck, man, the way I look 5 days out from the show, I wasn't even loaded or anything. I was still drinking water and sodium as normal, and that look looks crazy. To me, if you could just retain that look, that's peak.
Listen, you know? I got a shot here from the indie of Dorian and Luke standing next to each other. This is a freaking great look for Dorian. He looks so nasty hard here. I mean, and what can you tell me a little bit about this prep and about that? Let's go to that peak week. You know, what did you guys have to do? Was he this hard a week out, or was he close to this, or, you know, explain to me a little bit more about that last week.
Yeah, he was, as far as like body fat level.
Yeah.
3 weeks out was pretty much, that's, you know, where he was at. So, you know, at that point in time, then we just kept kind of doing what we were doing. I mean, we would, you know, we had fluctuations. What we did at that point, last couple of weeks, what we were able to do is where we would do, you know, earlier in the week, we would be more of a deficit.
Yeah.
And then here's what's kind of cool about getting ready early is you have this kind of flexibility. So we would just, early in the week, he'd be more of a deficit. And then towards the last 3 days of the week, his calories would come up. And he would, we would stabilize being in the hole from earlier in the week, and B, we would get a whole different way of tightening up and getting fat loss, because all of a sudden we were throwing in extra calories the last couple of days. And metabolically, he's challenged.
Yeah.
So there's different ways of triggering fat loss or metabolism, you know? So he was more metabolically efficient when we would kick in, you know, more calories the last couple of days at the end of the week. You know, his metabolism spike, not unlike when you do a cheat meal, and let's say if it's done correctly and timed correctly, you get like a pound or two lighter the next day, let's say.
Yeah.
Same thing. Sometimes during that prep, he would actually be lighter on the scale the day after the 3 days of high days compared to, do you see what I mean? Mm-hmm. Lower days. So, but I mean, we definitely did we did a drying up protocol. I mean, at the end, it was a peak week in the sense that, yeah, we shot for extreme dryness.
Okay. But at the same time, though,
more so water manipulation, electrolyte manipulation, more so than like, you know, depleting and loading and things of that nature.
Yeah.
And like full at the end.
Well, what I'm thinking,
estradiol, you know, as low as possible last 2 weeks. That's another thing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I guess just what I'm thinking too, one of the big things I wanted to hit on that strikes me is you were just repeating the same thing you'd done every week as far as loading, is what it sounds like. In the early part of the week, there's less food, and then in the later part, you're filling them up. And so by the time you get to the show, you already have seen this happen a number of times. You took the guesswork out of it.
Right. So his body was already primed for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
See, that's what I mean. If you're going to do stuff last week, at least, I'm not saying some people do like they do trial runs or whatever, but it's kind of that and the same. I mean, you know, last week, again, it's just some people like what we used to call voodoo stuff at the end, where you just, okay, you know, it's, you know, three shakes of a lamp. It's, you know, eye of newt, you know, wing of bat. And some people just think, okay, you know, it's peak week. So you have to do it. It's not engraved in stone.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, keep in mind, like the last week, last couple of days, I mean, people don't realize it, but, you know, there's so many moving parts. I mean, even just the stress of landing in the city, getting off the plane, you know, waiting for the luggage, you know, Uber, like getting settled in into the Airbnb or the hotel room, going shopping for food. Just that alone, just all the stress from that one day is going to kind of throw things off, you know? And then people are pretty, you can be cool as a cucumber, but in the background, you know that you're leading into an event and there's cortisol, like, you know, it's no matter what, it's not a normal week, you know, you're out of your environment, whatever. I mean, some people, as soon as the can goes on, there's like a fight or flight. There's a Pavlovian dog. Some people, as soon as they smell that Protan, they start getting nervous and they start, you know.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just the last week. My point is that the last week you're going to have a lot of variables that are out of your control anyway. So you might as well just stay stable. So, yeah, you're right. He was primed for that the last week because we were doing that as our theme. And then, you know, the only thing that we did differently, though, was that the last like 36 hours, we did pull out more of the dense food because Dorian looks best when his stomach is really pulled in and he's like digested a lot of the denser foods, you know? So what we do is like for the first like 2 days of it, you know, he'll be more denser foods, you know, more grass fed beef, more salmon, more avocado, more almond butter, more like, you know, density of food, right?
Heavier. Yeah.
Again, those foods are harder to break down. So, you know, you don't want to go on stage. A lot of guys go on stage where they're just filled with food, you know, ascending, descending, transverse colon's all filled with feces and you're up there in your stomach and you're not digesting food and you're blunt, you know. So it's really good to have, I like his best look is when his stomach, again, is very empty. So the last like 36 hours, we were doing basically like just really quick absorbing foods,
okay.
Stimulation foods, you know, white fish with cream of rice. Foods that would just rip through him, where he would eat a meal and 20 minutes later he was starving, you know.
Yeah.
We wanted the conveyor belt to rip right through him at the end. He was processing really well. Now, keep in mind, the 2 days prior to that, we had a lot of food density going into it. So he was already volumized from the food density for the 2 days prior to that. And then we switched more towards, we started pulling out the meat, you know, the avocado, the almond butter, the yams, the heavier, denser foods. And we opted more towards, you know, white fish, of course, simulates a lot easier than, let's say, beef or chicken or, you know, stuff like that. So we went for that. And of course, you know, cream rice being granulated and stuff, it's so easy to pick up and absorb. And for fats, you know, we had lower fats just in general the last 36 hours, but we would use the olive oil instead of the almond butter and the avocado.
Yeah. Yeah. That's super
the
fast.
Olive oil is just, to me, the olive oil is my favorite fat. I like using the off season and pre-contest. To me, it's just gasoline, you know?
Yeah.
It's my favorite fat to use.
Huh, I didn't know
so
that.
That's what we did last week. And then we did focus on, we focus on, you know, on dryness. There was a diuretic protocol. I mean, there was water manipulation. But, you know, we made sure for Indy, though, one cool effect we did get, speaking of water manipulation, was we made sure, like, I had him when he woke up the day prior to it, 6 in the morning, I had him drink like almost a whole gallon right then, you know, and then
Really?
we slowed it down. You know, there was some degree of sodium depletion, like the first, like the 2/3 of the day on Friday, the day before. And so I wanted all the water to roll through his almost sodium free environment. You know, when we cut out the water, several hours later, we reintroduced sodium towards the end of the day.
Oh, I
dry
see.
Him out even further.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we had placed, you know, there was diazides.
Okay. So just to wrap up the thoughts on insulin, because we kind of segued from that into kind
of course, it's me going
into
over
peak.
The phone.
I figured don't even no, don't apologize. I figure the questions are just there to kind of carry the conversation. but to wrap that up though, what do you think about like long term use? Is this something because I've seen some of the old protocols, guys would use insulin for 3 weeks on, then 3 weeks off. I've seen more modern protocols where guys will just use it, say, on days that they train a weak body part. You know, what are your thoughts on how you would break down insulin use?
There's a lot of different ways of using insulin. Like, for example, for prep, let's say, for example, when the athlete's really, really lean, then let's say once a week, let's say there's a high carb day. So I will a lot of times schedule an insulin day periodically during the prep once or twice a week, for that reason, not because we're trying to grow a weak body part, but just to, again, give the pancreas a chill and to get a really cool effect from, you know, the whole matching the sensitivity and keeping one sensitive.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, yeah, I mean, I've had people use, let's say, insulin on just leg day where they would use it post-workout. And then when they wake up the next day and their legs are really, really sore, I would want that recovery during that window period. And I would have insulin the following morning as well.
Okay.
I've done the 3 weeks on, 2 weeks off. I've done, you know, the 2 days on, 1 day off. You know, the idea is that with insulin, you have to keep ahead of losing sensitivity. And again,
yeah,
if you use too much insulin with too many carbs, you will lose sensitivity. And where do you go from there?
Yeah. Then what do you got to do? You just have to back off, I assume. Back off of carbs and everything?
Yeah. Yeah. Insulin's very, exactly. You have to reset. Insulin, don't get me wrong, it is very productive and it's a useful tool. But again, it's, if you use too much of it, I know it sounds very, doesn't sound very sexy. And I know this is a very generic 101 answer, but if you use too much of it for too long of a period of time, it'll kick in the ass. You won't build any more from it. When you lose sensitivity, you'll just start storing fat, and the IGF acknowledgement in your muscle tissue will diminish, and you won't grow anymore. You'll just get more stubborn visceral fat. Fuck.
All right. Let's see here. We've got a few cool ones.
You guys, by the way, I took a pretty substantial, large hit of sativa dominant hybrid about half an hour prior to the show. So if I'm rambling, my apologies. I'm sorry. I'm known for that. My apologies.
It's all right.
I have 4 or 5 brain cells left from everything I did when I was younger. So sometimes when I'm stoned, sometimes it doesn't help. So
you're right on track so far. You're right on track so far. I will add, I expected nothing less. So.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. I got a fun one we'll throw in here. This is from Steve. He says, and you're going to have to explain who each of these guys are first, because I don't know if all of our listeners will know who is the ultimate king of extreme, Steve Mihalik or Benny Pata?
Close. Both of these guys are animals. Steve Mihalik, rest in peace. So Benny Pata, you guys understand. So this guy was, he was a top amateur. He was a light heavyweight, and he would literally go on stage and just like, go crazy on these pose routines. And his quote, verbatim quote, was like, when I'm up there, I want to try to have a fucking hemorrhage. And I think Peter McGuff, I mean, there's a lot of guys who've known this. Sean Ray's known about him. He would like, crab into most musculars and like hold his breath in. He would like induce a nosebleed.
You're kidding.
I mean, this guy's blood pressure, like he walked around looking like a peeled beet, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Fucking, you know, just, you know, he just looked like he was just dying, you know, but he would go up there and like, rah, and he would like, you know, people would get a nosebleed if they're deadlifting, whatever. So he would encourage it on stage.
Yeah.
Rumor has it that he would actually like backstage, he would like pick his nose, like try to like cut his
get it, get it started.
the blood to flow, you know, not unlike the wrestlers, like, you know, they were kind of like little cuts of the razor blades, you know,
Right, right.
who knows. But yeah, he was very intense. But Steve Mitchell, like, so this is, this is back in New Jersey, and you know, I come from back east, and I'm just gonna tell you right now, the intensity of back east bodybuilding. Okay, so the West Coast might be like, you know, whatever, the Mecca, whatever, but as far as intensity and real hardcore bodybuilding, I'm
Yeah.
sorry, it's back east. I mean, I grew up in that. And so Steve Michalek was known for, you know, 3 hour leg workouts, burpees in between sets, walking lunges in the blistering heat outside, you know, for like 90 minutes straight.
Yeah.
You know, just crazy, crazy, crazy workouts, just high volume.
He had a name for it too, didn't he? It was like intent. It was it intensity or.
Yeah, some of that where he would like belittle you if he didn't like complete all this. Yeah, I mean, it was a real like thing, and like, I mean, some guys would get like, you know, hurt.
Yeah.
Say, you fucking pussy, get up, you know. But he just epitomized back east bodybuilding, and that's bodybuilding. I think they should have a shrine. Steve, our buddy Steve, who asked the question, he'll agree. There should be a shrine for Steve Mitchell, because, I mean, he did pioneer. You know, he's one of the guys that definitely did pioneer the aspects of intensity in bodybuilding.
Yeah, I thought he had like that was the name of his training. Insanity. That's what it was, wasn't
Insanity,
it? Insanity
yeah. It's
training.
just, I mean, it was. I mean, again, just crazy. You know, like they would just squat for 2 hours in a row, let's say, like, you know, just put 315 in the bar and just squat for 3 hours.
That's just
They can't
nuts,
do anything.
man.
It's crazy shit. Yeah.
There was a
So.
time I would have thought that that would have been like the thing to do. Like that's what I needed to do to like, you know, obviously, the more you train, the harder you train, the more you grow. I feel like looking at that now, though, I'm like, oh God, that would just destroy me. Like that would not build muscle for me personally.
Yeah, I mean, there's a point. Like, I mean, and it's actually like, I mean, he would look very cortisoled out. You know, as a matter of fact, there's pictures of him training where he has like that deer in the headlight look, where he just looks like that overtrained. You know, but they thought at that point, you know, more was better. But
Yeah.
it was too much volume.
Now, I didn't know. What's his name? Benny Poppa? Was that
Any
it?
product, yeah.
Pata. Okay. Yeah, I didn't know him. You were telling me about him here. This is the first I had heard about him. But it reminds me. So, I had worked with a guy here in Michigan on some posing last time I competed, and he had suggested me to do something I had never done before, and that was to basically like hold my breath and do like a Valsalva maneuver while I was hitting my most muscular. And it does. Like it pushed it would push those veins like all out of my face and out of my neck.
Yeah, traps and everything, upper
Yeah.
chest. Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
I did feel every time though, like especially if I because I was feeling weak by the end of the prep. Is you know what I mean? You start feeling like that real light feeling where like you know, you have to stand up slowly, your training is kind of, you know, kind of off. And
Yeah.
just like a real hard, intense maneuver like that, it'd make me feel lightheaded. I mean, I was afraid I was gonna pass out on stage. But do you know guys that do that? Because I mean, I've been doing this for a long time and I had never
Yeah, I
thought
mean,
to
like,
do
you
that.
know, we're growing up, you know, we're taught to pose where you know, side chest, you want to hold the iron, you know, because it, you know, keeps you know, higher and stuff like that. But there's a
Yeah.
degree of course, you see more surface vascularity. But I mean, I don't think to do that on every pose.
No, he mostly said the most muscular to
Yeah,
like
most
hit
muscular,
that
yeah, of
press
course.
out, you know. You're kind of like doing a Valsalva maneuver, holding your breath and pressing out, you know. And I mean, I just remember all my face would turn red and all the veins in my neck would start coming out. It was
Well,
disgusting.
he would do that, but on steroids. Like, he was probably holding his breath, just walking out on stage just to get that effect. Like, I remember when he would walk out, he was right away, like, ah, you know, the facial expressions, and
Yeah.
he looked like a gargoyle. And I mean, it was a trip to see it. This is crazy.
I'll see if I can find some
I
video.
don't know if he's. I mean, to tell you the truth, I mean, I wonder if he could even like just Google it as we speak, if he's even alive.
I don't know. Let me
He
see.
strikes me, no offense, but he strikes me as someone who wasn't very healthy.
Yeah. No, I'd
He's
imagine.
definitely the fit fam lifestyle, so.
I'll look it up here in a minute, though.
I
I
mean, you're
want.
purposely trying to hemorrhage on stage.
Yeah. So, who do you think is more intense out of the two of them, if you had to pick?
I guess say Steve.
Steve, I feel
He's just
like,
a, he was crazy.
yeah, it sounds to me like Benny was like putting on a show. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Benny, yeah, as far as intent, no, of course, I'm sure he trained back, you know, trained hard and stuff. Yeah,
Yeah.
Benny was just more intense as far as, you know, like actually on stage antics, you know, but Steve, as far as, you know, training style, yeah.
Yeah. I don't see it offhand.
I see. He's alive.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe that's it. Let's see. Let me find my list here. All right. Oh, Andrew Berry has a cool one. He says, how happy was Dave when Dorian turned pro? I was standing behind him, and I didn't even know him at the time. Slapped him on the back and said, congratulations, and he turned around and hugged me.
Me? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, when you get, I mean, I think getting someone their pro card, believe it or not, is actually more satisfying than a pro win in many ways, you know? Because it's, I mean, in a way, these amateur shows are tougher, you know?
Yeah, I mean, they're brutal.
Yeah, they're brutal. And, like, that was actually, that was exhilarating for a couple of reasons. Because, first of all, just to see, I mean, keep in mind, before we started working, you know, he just, I mean, Dorian was a very good bodybuilder prior to that. You know, he'd won the junior nationals and all that, and, you know, he's really good.
Yeah.
But to see him, the progression, you know, it was like, I think it was 12th or 13th at North Americans. Then we started working, and, you know, right away, he got second at the USA and then third at the North Americans. And, you know, after North Americans, we're like, all right, maybe we should just, you know, go into off season, we'll resume next year. But then we're like, you know what? Fuck, dude. Nationals just a couple months away, and we're able to pull it off. And I think after that whole year, because keep in mind, first of all, he had to requalify for nationals for national competition. So the first thing he did, he won the Gifted Cup a couple weeks before the USA. Then we did the USA, and then, you know, so at the end of the year, after all these shows, North American, USA, North American, the Gifted Cup, you know, to see him pull that off. In nationals, which I do feel the nationals is the most prestigious show, you know, I think, because you get in the East Coast guys and it's just, I mean, don't get me wrong, there's incredible USAs and North Americans, but I think the nationals just seems to be more, you know, kind of more prestigious, I think.
I don't know why, but I agree. Like, I don't know why that is, but it just seems like that's like the, I don't know
what it is, but it's just, it's the end of the year and it just seems like,
I think that's why it's like the, that's
yeah,
like the,
I just think and, usually for the most part, there's just more depth in the classes.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. You see some guys at the USA, I mean, and North Americans too. They're all equal. I mean, sure, they're all fucking competitors. Don't get me wrong. But that was a very, that year, that win was very, that meant a lot. It's cool. You know, we were at a really cool, my wife and I, and we were out there, his girlfriend at the time. And, it was just one of these events. It just rolled perfectly. Everything, you know, we had a great time. We celebrated. It's kind of cool too, because we were staying at our Airbnb right down the street. You know, this is Miami, Florida, if you guys don't know. By the way, it's the Nationals. It's not the Miami Nationals. USA is not Vegas Nationals. It's the fucking USA. The North Americans is the North Americans. It's not Pittsburgh Nationals. For love of God, please.
Don't worry. I think the people listening to our shows, we know that, Dave. You're preaching to the choir here. But I'm grateful that you cleared that up for us.
That's right. But what was really cool about the Nationals was, you know, Miami. So right down this, you know, there's like that big waterway, that canal, that's okay, a block away. So
I haven't been to this one.
It's really cool. Yeah. And there's like the bridge, you know, that opens up the waterway and then the cars. Right. So it's kind of cool. Between the prejudging and the night show, we're like, fuck, so, you know, he was in the middle, they moved into the middle. So we knew he was going to win. So the US, the Nationals, the prejudging is Friday and then Saturday's the night show. So we were like cloud nine between smoking weed and stuff like that. And then we looked out the window. It's kind of cool. And we're looking down. It's like, we're like 25 stories up.
Yeah.
With the waterway. And we see these manatees, the Florida manatees.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. They're huge. You know, they're called sea cows. You know, they're huge, you know, and they're just seeing them in the water. It's just the whole thing was just awesome. And I do remember Andrew back then. It's just, you know, again, you know, every pro card does feel special, you know. There's no doubt. This was a really good one. So yeah, it was, tell Andrew, Andrew, you're listening. Yeah, it's awesome feeling. Of course,
that's cool, man. That's cool. Jeff Riley says, "What was your aha moment when you realized that you were onto something mixing protein sources with your athletes? Is this a year-round thing, off-season and prep?" So first of all, for anybody who hasn't listened to our previous shows and doesn't know Dave, you've I guess the cat's out of the bag. You mix proteins. I mean, that's in the same meal, right? Is what you're talking about.
Yeah. I mean, for me, like, I'm not a meet your macros guy. Okay. So to me, just really quickly, I believe foods behave differently. Chicken, beef, ground turkey, salmon, grass-fed, there's all different digestive rates and simulation rates, and there's different amino acid profiles and signatures as well.
And
So I
different,
guess
probably different
when I'm
digestion for each person.
Yeah, what's that?
And probably
What's
different
that?
digestion for each person too, that you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. So, right. So when I was younger, I started playing around with it when I was a bodybuilder in the 90s, early 90s. And it just like, I mean, I think initially it was just kind of like, I don't know, I just, we were back then, we would use canned tuna for fish. That was the big thing. And, I'd be dieting and just like, I'm like, this kind of like, these are two different proteins, maybe like, excuse the expression, you are, I was thinking, well, if we combine these two, maybe we'll get some kind of a layered effect, like a sustenon of proteins, if you will, But anyway, I started doing that, and I started finding myself like an hour later, like I was hungrier with combined proteins than I was with a straight single protein, let's say. So it dawned on me like, okay, this is having a metabolic effect, And I started seeing just more of a density in the tissue. I felt like I was actually retaining more nitrogen in the muscle cell from combining these proteins. So it just kind of stuck with me, and it just, I think one reason, let's say using Dorian as an example, one reason why he went from a heavyweight to a super heavyweight, one reason why Adam Young went from heavyweight to super heavyweight, those guys, for example, is because when we started mixing proteins, and they grew more. They had more volume in the muscles, more density. And I think, gram of protein is not a gram of protein. I mean, if you had some, okay, well, I meet your macros. Okay, well, I'm gonna have 400 grams of protein today. If you had just egg whites and whey isolate, you'll look like mush. If it was just chicken, it would just be one dimensional. To me, the muscle changes. I just see there's more of a growth response.
I think the, one way that I've heard you describe it before was, and maybe it was to me, or maybe I heard you talk about this to someone else, but it was that kind of chicken was like the middle of the road. Like, as far as fullness goes, chicken was middle of the road. More like if you lean toward like fish, egg whites, you end up getting leaner, but you remain flatter. And then with, beef, obviously. And there's gonna be more calories in a, a pound of beef or whatever from fat. So there's that. But then you get that fuller look. I do think there's something to that, man.
Yeah,
Different meats
right.
work
So,
different.
right, exactly. So, like a lot of times, I'm into like, let's say, combining whitefish with ground beef, because we're getting like the metabolic momentum, stimulation from the whitefish. We're getting the density, from the ground beef, Also, I'm very much big into using a lot of fats in the off season and pre-contest. If we're talking about developing a caloric surplus, guys, keep in mind, a gram of carb, gram of fat, gram of carb, gram of protein only has 4 calories. Fats have 9 calories, So let's say you want to, you're it's off season for someone, and let's say they don't do well on tons of carbs, like they get fat if they're having too many carbs. It's a great way, you can utilize fats as a great way, again, to create a metabolic, to create a caloric, surplus. You can, fats are a great way of establishing that, and fats behave differently too. Omega-3, omega-6, omega-9, they behave differently. To me, olive oil is more of a fat burning fat compared to, let's say, almond butter. You know what I mean? There's similarities, like the fat spectrum in olive oil and avocado are actually very similar. Avocado is more of a slower fat because, again, there's fiber content to the avocado. With the olive oil, again, these are olive oil and avocado are very high in omega nines, by the way, and polyunsaturated, I should say. That's what olive oil contains, and so does avocado, but they behave differently just because of the surface area.
What do you mean?
Avocado has fiber, olive oil doesn't.
All right. Let's see here.
Protein, I just seen a lot of like, it just seems like I just see really cool effects metabolically with combining proteins in the same meal, and also from just a growth response. I wish I could have a more scientific nail on how to tell you why. All I can say is that there are different assimilation rates with proteins, and there are different amino acid profiles. And I guess combining them, for some reason, there's some kind of a catalyst effect metabolically and growing muscle, because when I do it, guys, they grow.
Here's what I've seen, because I, listening to you, I've tried to, start implementing some of this with some of my guys. And here's one of the things I've noticed is that If you just tell somebody, eat 6 ounces of meat, boom, done. That's a lot different than saying, eat 6 ounces of fish or eat 6 ounces of chicken. And then if you want to start combining those things, like you'll see a response from someone and be like, okay, well, this is how he looks when he eats chicken, and this is how he looks when he eats beef. If I was to say, hey, I like this look, but let's go for a little more fullness, then maybe we could even shift some of that to beef. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And that being said, there's some times where I'll start off like the ratio, let's say, because like let's say I'll do combinations of ground turkey with salmon, let's say, or chicken with white, like all these different combinations. Sometimes let's say if we want to get more of a metabolic effect, the ratio of fish would be higher compared to let's say the beef, or let's say the 90-10 ground turkey will be at a higher ratio compared to the fattier salmon. You know what I mean? And then let's say if I want to stabilize things, I would maybe shift the ratio, bring up lower the leaner protein and raise the denser protein.
All right. Let's see here. I got some questions from the Instagram. Let me see if I can pull these up here. Where's this damn question at, Dave? Dave, where's my questions? Okay, here's one of them. Do you believe in periodizing training for bodybuilding? If so, off-season versus prep?
Yeah, I mean, like, first of all, like, I mean, there's some guys who do like with periodization training. Let's say they do more of like a powerlifting segment, sometimes more like traditional sets, and maybe sometimes a segment where it's like you back off the tonnage and you're doing more supersets and drop sets. I mean, rule of thumb, whether it's pre-contest or off-season. Ironically, I don't think that this answers the question. I don't think there should be that much of a training style change in off-season pre-contest. And then I'll get back to periodization. I think your training style will dictate how you look on, how you look. So very often, a lot of times, I don't know if this, hopefully this answers the question. Let's say when it's prep, some people are like, okay, well, I'm used, there's less calories, so I might as well just start, doing more reps and, go just automatically, let's just go lighter. And then the intensity comes down and there's more of a, training quicker between sets and, all that stuff. I think you're going to lose density and volume in your tissue if you do that. I think if you do the other end of the spectrum, if you're training and you're doing just sets of triples and quadruples and not breaching 6 reps, you're not going to recruit enough muscle fibers to get a complete look to your muscle as well. You know what I mean? So as far as periodization training, period training, when there's more calories, you're most likely going to be stronger. Although I've seen people, ironically, when they're dieting, I've seen some guys actually get stronger during prep. I don't know if they feel like lighter and they feel more agile and more explosive, whatever, when they're lighter. But certainly, though, in terms of pay attention to your connective tissue, because if you're in the training style too, like let's say if you're like grinding, if you're just doing tons of, incline pressing, like of course I love the compound movements, but if you're feeling like, tendonitis, or you're feeling like the connective tissue is getting like, stressed in your elbows, your knees, your AC joints, or your hip flexors and stuff like that, then you might want to actually back off on some of the tonnage. I mean, because you're obviously you're stressing your connective tissue. So sometimes you do want to back off. Let's say the following week, maybe you can still do a compound movement, but I would let's say, don't go as heavy and do more of a strip set, maybe less force reps. But again, I mean, for building muscle, again, the variables that we want to play with are always, it's progressive weight resistance, right? It's progressive overload. So we either want to A, do more weight and get the same amount of reps with the same weight, or B, get more reps out of the same weight. Both scenarios, you need to increase intensity to get either more reps or use more weight and get the same reps. And that's how you progress, because your muscles are only going to respond to the stress load you place on them. Your muscles are very adaptive. So you need to always you always want to strive for either lifting heavier, keeping the same reps, or getting more reps with the same weight, whilst maintaining good form, and that's going to require more intensity. Does that answer the question, or?
Yeah, I think so. I've got one more for you. This is a personal question. I wanted to ask you, personal question as in I personally came up with it. You've been doing this for a long time, all right? What in the last, we'll say, 3 years has changed about your one of your ideas or perspectives on any aspect of bodybuilding? You know, because I feel like we're if you're still in this, if you're still involved, you're still evolving. You're always evolving. You're always learning. So what's something that we'll say like the last 3 years, you can even go further if you want, last 4 or 5 years even, that you've found you've changed your mind on something?
Ready? The last week, keeping variables, not as simple as possible, but not all of a sudden again, making it a peak week for the sake of a peak week.
So I mean, a few years ago, you would do that, huh? You would like add more variables than you felt you needed?
I guess my main thing is, wanting to remove stress from the prep on both the athlete and coach. What I've really learned the last 3 years is now the desire to get someone ready a couple weeks out is a game changer.
Yeah.
Because then you're in control. You have so much more control. You know what to expect. You know, I'd rather just be like, okay, you know, see you in the morning, scratch your nuts, get a good night's sleep, put your chonkos on, let's go to the venue in the morning. You know, like it should be a very catch up on ESPN. I'll see you in the morning.
Yeah.
I'll look at you at 6 o'clock to see what we got to do. You know, it should be the last week. So I guess the biggest thing that's changed for me is I don't want the athlete being stressed at the end. I don't want to be stressed at the end. I like to try to get some good sleep the last week. And so does the athlete.
Yeah.
It's going to be stressful as it is anyway. So what I've learned is to try to really focus on trying to be ready 2 to 3 calendar weeks out, so that the last week, again, is just a week of getting better with like a little manipulation at the end in terms of electrolyte manipulation, water, whatever, and just that.
Yeah.
You know, if that. Sometimes I don't change shit.
Mm.
If that crazy look the 4 or 5 days out, like, why not just fucking capture that?
Yeah.
And there's no manipulation going on there. There's no sodium. You know what I mean? So sometimes it's like that. And sometimes it is a very traditional, you know, drying out protocol. But just in general, the last three or four years, I've now really just trying to focus on getting the person ready a couple weeks out. So the last week is just a cruising week or a stabilization week or however you want to call it. Or as I like to call it, another week of just getting better.
Nice. I like it, man. That's all I got for you, Dave. What do you got going on for the rest of the day in quarantine?
We're gonna go to a concert later. We got a ball game scheduled.
Right.
Big cookout, a community cookout. No, man, I'm just gonna my wife and I are gonna go out. We got some work to do in the backyard.
Nice.
There's the orange tree. We're gonna pull some oranges off, and the avocado tree is starting to do its thing.
Nice.
So we're gonna get some fruit, smoke some pot. I had some phone calls I got to catch up on, some business calls, and that's about it. I'll probably watch Sopranos reruns, smoke more weed, eat, maybe some Breaking Bad reruns, smoke more pot, eat, maybe a Pornhub thing in the bathroom real quick. That's about it. Very fancy day.
Have you watched Ozark?
Yes.
Okay. Just check in.
Yeah. I'm into all the, you know, my favorite go-tos are, you know, Sopranos. It's that. My favorite movie of all time is Heat.
And, oh, yeah.
Heat and the Town. That's another one. I like gangster movies, you know.
The Town.
The Town. And the movie Tom Hardy. My favorite Tom Hardy movie is The Drop.
Okay.
Seen that?
No, but, I haven't. I haven't seen that
Gangsters
one.
Gangsters in Brooklyn. Badass movie.
Huh.
It was also Gandolfini's last movie, too.
Huh, no kidding.
It's a good movie. Man, what do you got going on?
Just work stuff. That's it. Hanging out with Victoria, and that's about it, man.
Wait, just so you guys know, my wife's name is Victoria. So Scott and I always were like, "How's your Victoria doing?"
Yes. Well, I hope we can get this season. Hopefully, we can salvage it, man. I want to see your guys on stage. Plus, we were gonna hang out. I was gonna come out and hang out at the indie and shoot some video of you guys. Video of you doing your thing, getting the guys ready and everything. So hopefully we can do that at Chicago or something. That'd be
fingers
cool.
crossed for Chicago.
All right, that sounds good, man. Guys, if you want to reach out to Dave, I've got his Instagram down in the show notes. Definitely give him a follow. Keep up with everything he's got going on with his guys. Dave, I appreciate your time, man.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you guys for putting up for my stoned ass today. I know I'm always all over the place, but it's always a fun doing this. It's a passion of mine, and it's always fun doing this with these brothers. So thanks. We'll do it again soon.
All right. That sounds good, man. for another episode of Advices Radio and Think Big Bodybuilding Media. I'm Scott McNally with Dave Kallick. We'll see you guys. All right.